Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, February 4th, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, National Weather Service in Eureka issues a beach hazard for moderate sneaker wave risk, and in a special extended story, witnesses tell Joint Committee of ICE terrorizing U.S. citizens, leaving people injured and labeled terrorists. So stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkyon, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
Today, the National Weather Service in Eureka issued a beach hazard warning for moderate sneaker wave risk that will be in place starting 8 p.m. on Thursday till 3 a.m. on Friday. During this time, it's important to remember that sneaker waves may still occur after this beach hazard warning ends, and to avoid climbing rocks, jetties, and other outcroppings on the shore. KMUD News spoke with Jonathan White, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Eureka, for more information.
So basically just a large swell is forecast to build into our waters like Thursday into Friday. Basically guidance is indicating that the swell could peak at near like 12 feet at like 15 to 16 second period during the day on Friday. While there will be decently high breakers like at the shore, but that's still like below our criteria for high surf. But basically we have a sneaker wave indicator that shows that there's a moderate risk of sneaker waves that will impact the area on Friday. And basically, like, the main message is that people who go to the beach should stay far back from the surf Friday and possibly into the weekend as that swell kind of dies down.
Sneaker waves are unpredictable surges of water that reach further up the beach than expected, often following sets of smaller waves. During this time, the National Weather Service advises beachgoers not to get too close to the ocean and to avoid steep beaches. On steep beaches, as opposed to flat beaches, sneaker waves have less time to lose momentum, which can make it difficult to avoid getting swept out. White provides more advice for beachgoers at this time.
Just basically, don't turn your back on the ocean. Don't get too close. Yeah, and just stay alert when you're at the beach. And, that's the main message.
There is also a small craft advisory from Point St. George in Del Norte County to Cape Mendocino. This advisory is in place from 9 p.m. Thursday to 3 a.m. on Sunday, and during this time, the National Weather Service advises inexperienced mariners, especially those operating smaller vessels, to avoid going out in hazardous conditions. For more information on beach hazard warnings and weather updates, the website is weather.gov/EKA/. Members of Congress and the U.S. Senate are demanding sweeping changes to federal immigration enforcement after hearing testimony from U.S. citizens who say they were violently targeted by ICE and Customs and Border Protection agents. During a joint congressional hearing where no Republicans were in attendance, witnesses described shootings, physical assaults, and a lack of accountability within the Department of Homeland Security. KPFA's Lauren Schmidt filed this extended report.
A congressional hearing focused on the use of violent force by DHS and ICE on U.S. citizens brought together members of the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives. Witnesses included victims of ICE tactics, legal experts, and family members of citizens harmed and killed during immigration enforcement actions. Representative Robert Garcia of California, who serves on the House Oversight Committee, said ICE is terrorizing communities.
And to be clear, we've seen people dragged from cars, beaten, gassed, attacked with crowd control weapons, blinded, like back in my home state of California, left with broken ribs, run off the road, beaten, injured, disfigured, and shot. Officers have been ordered to enter homes without warrants in violation of the Constitution. And we've also seen the federal government labeling American citizens as domestic terrorists, calling people, quote, assassins, and falsely claiming they intended to kill law enforcement, which we know, of course, has been untrue.
Democrats on the House Oversight Committee say they have tracked nearly 500 incidents on their immigration enforcement dashboard. Garcia said about 40% involved problematic use of force by agents. Lawmakers described what they say is a pattern of escalating and unlawful violence meant to intimidate dissent, and alleged efforts by federal agencies to cover their tracks to avoid accountability.
I think it's important for the public to recognize that this administration has lied, has defamed, and has smeared people that have been peacefully protesting.
Connecticut Democrat Senator Richard Blumenthal described the shootings of Renee Good and Alex Preddy as murders carried out in cold blood, but said the brutality of those incidents go far beyond Minneapolis.
Let's be very clear. These stories are not just about Minneapolis. People hear from all over the country. These stories span the country. The nation is Minneapolis. We are all Minneapolis. And these stories are a call to action.
Democrats said they are demanding a sweeping overhaul of DHS policies, including mandatory body cameras, bans on masks, enhanced training, independent investigations, outside monitoring, and clear pathways for citizens to sue ICE agents, similar to accountability standards applied to local police. However, several lawmakers noted that responsibility ultimately lies with leadership at the top.
The top ranks of DHS are more than complicit. They are the driving force behind this brutality, and they should be held accountable. They've not only directed those actions, but also the lies and misinformation that have been presented to courts in violation of the duties lawyers have to present only the truth to courts. And they have engaged in character assassination against today's witnesses, as well as countless others, including Alex and Renee. We are at a defining moment. It's a moral moment. We are determined to continue to investigate and uncover wrongdoing, but we'll also seek action for accountability and justice.
The brothers of the late Renee Nicole Macklin Good addressed members of Congress to share more about their sister, who the Department of Homeland Security described as a domestic terrorist, but they lovingly refer to as Nene.
My name is Luke Ganger, and I'm here with my brother, Brent. Renee Good is our sister. We're here on behalf of Nene's big family and those who loved her. We're here to ask for your help.
Attorney Antonio Ramannucci, who represents the family of Renee Good, described the actions of federal agents and top officials as constitutional violations.
The occupation by ICE and CBP in our cities is way beyond their mission, leading to unnecessary provocation that causes needless harm and death. These operations in multiple states have routinely and consistently included violations of the Constitution. We call for an immediate end of false narratives by federal officials about the victims of excessive force. The character assassinations and conclusions before an investigation has been started, let alone completed, must stop. In America, our leaders must be held to a standard of truth and responsible speech. There is no such thing as absolute immunity, and that perception leads to agents who behave with absolute impunity, leading to exaggerated and violent, provoked encounters with people.
Ramannucci called on Congress to amend Section 1983, the federal civil rights law that allows people to sue law enforcement officers for constitutional violations.
Keep in mind that this act is 155 years old and desperately needs an amendment. However, similar legal action against federal law enforcement officers like ICE or Border Patrol is not currently allowed under Section 1983. There is a current possible path of civil recovery through the Federal Tort Claims Act, or FTCA, but this is challenging. It requires first the filing of a claim with the government agency that has harmed you, and then waiting up to 6 months for a reply. Our current paradox is that America should not require the permission of the federal government to sue the federal government for cases like Renee Good or Alex Preddy. If the government must give you permission to seek accountability for violation of constitutional rights, then your rights are just words on paper.
The statute currently applies to state, county, and municipal officers, but not federal agents. Romanucci argued Congress could amend the law by adding four words, quote, or the United States, close quote, which he said would end immunity for federal agents. And lawmakers noted that it's that perceived immunity that is currently shielding ICE agents who shot Marimar Martinez in Chicago last October. She shared her story in front of the committee.
Esto es para toda mi gente inmigrante. My name is Marimar Martinez. I am a first-generation Mexican-American. As a survivor of this administration actions, as a 30-year-old USA citizen with no criminal history, I believe that I had nothing to worry about. But I was concerned for my friends, neighbors, based on the well-publicized incidents involving Border Patrol agents in our community over the past few weeks, arresting anyone with brown skin for no legitimate law enforcement reasons. For the next 15 to 20 minutes, I followed these Border Patrol agents through my neighborhood, honking my horn, shouting out La Migra, to warn my neighbors about the presence of these agents who have been terrorizing our community over the past few weeks.
Martinez testified that on October 4th, 2025, she was on her way to donate clothes to a church when she noticed unmarked immigration vehicles and began honking to alert her community to the presence of ICE.
I made eye contact with the driver of the Border Patrol vehicle and watched as he turned the steering wheel once again to his left and sideswept my vehicle. I immediately froze, slammed on the brakes, and stopped my car. The Border Patrol vehicle stopped just to 1 to 2 car lengths ahead of me. It seemed like time stopped. I knew from watching the news coverage of other Border Patrol encounters in Chicago that I was in danger. I watched the vehicle of Agent Border Patrol agent killing Silverio Villegas Gonzalez just 3 weeks prior. I knew I had to get to safety before I was dragged from my car and likely beaten or killed.
She says an agent sideswiped her vehicle, contradicting the government's account of the incident. Martinez said she fled out of fear for her life, and as she drove away, she felt bullets pierce her body.
As I continued to drive past the Border Patrol agents, I could hear my back passenger window shatter, and I felt bullets continue to pierce my body. As I attempted to drive to a safe location, I began to feel lightheaded. I looked down and I noticed blood gushing out of my arms and legs, and I realized I'd been shot multiple times. As I became lightheaded, I became worried I would pass out and endanger other drivers on the road. I managed to drive a mile from where the incident happened, and I pulled into a parking lot of a mechanic shop, and I called 911.
She testified that she was later discharged from the hospital directly into FBI custody and taken to a detention facility, despite being an American citizen.
The news in the jail that evening had my story and was being called a domestic terrorist. They said I quote-unquote rammed federal agents. I was in shock. If they only knew, I was a month away from paying off my truck, and I will never intentionally damage my vehicle, much less be crazy enough to hit a law enforcement. On Friday, I was teaching the young children at the Montessori school, and we were singing and dancing and getting ready for spooky season, preparing fall activities to do the following week. And on Saturday, my own government was calling me a domestic terrorist, and I was in federal detention centers with the bullet holes all over my body.
Similar to claims made in the killing of Alex Preddy, DHS cited Martinez as being armed as justification for the use of force.
I heard the government describe me as being armed, even though I knew my gun was always inside my snap close holster at the bottom of my purse, where I always kept it. The prosecutor told the judge there was no allegation that I have took the gun out my purse, but that did not stop DHS from continue to say I was armed. During this incident, my attorney explained to the judge that I have a valid concealed carry license and that as a young woman living in Chicago, I carry a gun to protect me from danger. Thankfully, the judge quickly denied the government's detention request and released me on bond that day.
Another witness, Aaliyah Rahman, a U.S. citizen from Minneapolis who has autism and a traumatic brain injury, testified that she was violently dragged from her car by immigration agents in January. After telling them she had a disability and was detained without immediate medical care or accommodations.
On January 13th, on the way to my 39th appointment at Hennepin County's Traumatic Brain Injury Center, I encountered a traffic jam caused by ICE vehicles and no signs indicating how to get around it. I had not wanted to pull into a blocked, chaotic intersection, but verbally agreed to do so and rolled down my window after an agent yelled, "Move! I will break your effing window!" His first instruction. Agents on all sides of my vehicle yelled conflicting threats and instructions that I could not process while watching for pedestrians. Then the glass of the passenger side window flew across my face. I yelled, "I'm disabled," at the hands grabbing at me, and an agent said, "Too late." I felt immersed in a pattern, and I thought of Genoa Donald, an autistic black man killed by police during a traffic stop in 2021. I remembered Mr. Siberio Villaega Gonzalez, who was killed by ICE in his vehicle last year. An agent pulled a large combat knife in front of my face, which I thought was for cutting me, and later learned was used to cut off my seatbelt. Shooting pain went through my head, neck, and wrists when I hit the ground face first and people leaned on my back. I felt the pattern, and I thought of Mr. George Floyd, who was killed four blocks away. I was carried face down through the street by my cuffed arms and legs while yelling that I had a brain injury and was disabled. I now cannot lift my arms normally. I was never asked for ID, never told I was under arrest, never read my rights, and never charged with a crime.
Martin Daniel Rescon, a U.S. citizen from San Bernardino, testified that last August he was in a car with family members when ICE and CPB agents unlawfully stopped them and fired multiple shots into their vehicle.
There were two men on either side of the car, and they were not wearing any uniform. I cannot tell who these men surrounding our car with guns were. We again asked them to show identification and why they were approaching us with so much aggression. Only seconds after they started pounding on the windows, one of the men broke the driver's side window, punched Francisco in the face, and began reaching into the car. At the same time, a man on the other side of the car broke the passenger window where Jonathan was sitting and began reaching into the vehicle. They shattered the windows, and in that moment, the whole world felt like it was the size of the inside of our pickup. And we were sitting in harm's way with nothing to do but record the horrifying experience.
Rascon said the agents wore no uniform, showed no identification, and opened fire as the family attempted to flee, narrowly escaping with their lives.
As he fired and made contact with the passenger side of our car multiple times, I will never forget the fear and having to quickly duck my head as the shots were fired at the car. Any one of those bullets could have killed me or two people that I love.
DHS would press charges against the family. However, cell phone footage later corroborated their claims, the judge siding with Rascon. Legal expert Seth Stoughton, a former police officer and professor at the University of South Carolina School of Law, raised concerns about what he described as a possible increase in, quote, blue-on-blue incidents, close quote, where unidentified federal agents could be mistaken for threats by local law enforcement.
Among other things, local officers have responded to kidnapping and shooting in progress calls. In one incident, a local officer drew his weapon on a motorist that he saw pointing a gun at someone else, only to later learn that that motorist was an ICE agent.
Before moving on to additional comment, Representative Garcia asked for clarification from the victims, including Marimar Martinez.
You were shot 5 times, which is terrifying and horrific. Your own government called you a domestic terrorist, is that correct?
Correct.
And you're not a terrorist, of course, correct?
No, I'm not.
You're a teacher, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, correct.
You were convicted of no crimes, is that correct?
Correct.
Have you ever been convicted of a crime?
Never.
Never been convicted of a crime. But the government kept calling you a domestic terrorist even after all the baseless criminal charges against you were dismissed, is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Would you agree that the government is trying to intimidate protesters and to encourage more violence?
Yes.
Is it true that in the body cam footage, the CBP officer told you to, and I'm so sorry for saying this, the officer told you to, quote, do something, bitch, before he fired?
Yes.
While senators and representatives pledged further investigations and accountability, New Mexico Democrat Melanie Stansberry warned that promises alone are not enough.
I mean, this isn't just about sunlight. We're here to bear witness. We're here to tell the truth. But I'm sorry, we need to defund and dismantle this agency immediately. And a bill just passed a few moments ago before we walked into this hearing room to give another 2 weeks to think about a deal. No, it's time to defund this. This has to end.
For KPFA News, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Search teams working on missing and murdered Indigenous people cases must prepare themselves for the likelihood they'll come across a body. One group based in Portland is proactively preparing volunteers for that encounter. Brian Bull of Buffalo's Fire reports.
Inside an anatomy lab, William Borman, professor of basic sciences for the University of Western States, carefully turns a cadaver over on a metal table. A tinge of formaldehyde fills the air. 7 volunteers with the group MMIW Search and Hope Alliance examine its tendons, nerves, and organs.
This is a
murder right here. Kimberly Lenning is the group's founder. She says she's seen death up close many times.
And I think through my years of traumatic experiences with violent death, I've seen a lot. It's prepared me, I think, just through the fire, like steel is forged through fire.
But for most people, exposure to death and corpses isn't a recurring thing. So Lenning reached out to Borman to arrange a visit. Not only does it gird people for when they find a body, but it helps them discern between human and animal remains. 2 volunteers, Sabrina Griffith and Isabella Regalado, said they would recommend this experience.
The veins, the actual ligaments, the muscles, it was quite surprising to see it and feel it in real life. I've only touched bones and stuff like that, so it's very interesting to actually feel the inner part of our body.
It's actually been better than anticipated. I thought it would be a little bit more gruesome, but everyone has been very professional and understanding and doing their best to educate everyone else.
Lenning and Borman remind people that viewing cadavers isn't the same as coming across a corpse, whether that's in the wilderness or city. Such bodies aren't preserved, and beyond what the cause of death inflicted, would be subject to the elements and scavengers.
If it's in the wilderness, in the forest, bears, cougars, wolves, they're going to tear at stuff and leave the bones. So definitely pieces more than together.
Near the end of the visit, Borman sprayed a blue hydrating liquid to keep the cadavers from drying out and developing mold. He said everyone in Lenning's group was respectful and asked great questions.
I'm pleased that we were able to make this happen. If she were interested in doing it again, I'd be open to doing it again.
Lenin and her volunteers gave small gifts of gratitude to Borman and thanked him for his time. MMIW Search and Hope Alliance is preparing for two search efforts in the next few weeks. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull in Portland, Oregon.
An Irish language activist has won a landmark decision in Northern Ireland following her arrest during a protest. Show McPullen has more.
74-year-old grandmother Moira Vicinalli attended a peaceful protest in support of the Palestinian people last August in Belfast. She was among those arrested under the UK's controversial terrorism laws because of her T-shirt. During the arrest, English-speaking police officers were unable to understand her as she gave them her address because she spoke in her indigenous language of Irish. The police ombudsman ruled last week that the arresting officer should have taken reasonable steps to arrange a translation service and that Vicinalli experienced, quote, oppressive behavior. The police watchdog also issued a policy recommendation for future engagements with Irish language speakers. Vicinalli's lawyer says this decision, quote, puts a marker down for how the police service must respect the Irish language moving forward. For National Native News, I'm Sho McPullen in Ireland.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley, and thanks to our reporters, Lauren Schmidt and Antonia Gonzalez. KMA News is online, and you can find us on KMA.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.